It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, welcome to Perfect Levels. I'm your host, Bob Fosse. There's a fly in the way. Hello, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world with no echo. Try it out. Play it out some speakers really loud in a warehouse. No echo.
Nope, not a bit.
It's weird. We could explain it. It's very complicated science. But yeah, no echo. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 122.
122.
Yes.
Isn't that some sort of significant number?
Aren't they all? I mean, it's kind of amazing that every time we have a new show, it's like, I can't believe we have a new show.
I'm a little surprised. I keep expecting we're going to get sick of this pretty soon.
But it just doesn't happen. Although, I imagine our listeners are getting pretty sick of it.
That's what amazes me. Not when we do an episode, when there is evidence that someone listened for the 122nd time. For those of you who are just joining in now, then 122 is a significant number, because it's the number we got you. Also, let me give you a rundown on the show. We have a hat. It's magical. It has its own email address. You can email said hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And you should, because the way our show works is that listeners email said email, send a message to it, as it were.
Right.
Comments, questions, topics for us to discuss, whatever. The email has magical powers, hence the name, to take those emails and all on its own, with no human intervention whatsoever, it turns them into little cards. Sorry, I'm distracted. I hope you guys can't hear, but I can hear a video in the other room the producer is playing, so it's very distracting. Turns them into little cards that we draw out of the hat at random, and we talk about those topics until we're bored. That's the entire show.
I mean, ask yourself this. Do you know any other hat that has its own email address?
Yeah,
no, you probably don't. And that answers it magically and fills itself with
no human intervention at all.
And fills itself with these little cards that someone can draw out? You probably have never heard of a hat that does that until now. That's what makes this show so
special. I know that's true, because if you type in the magical talking hat in Google, we're at the top now.
And that's all there is.
And most of it's we get a little bit of mix in with the sorting hat from Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, yeah.
But we're way cooler than that. And we'll sort you if you want to, also. Tell us, and we'll tell you what. Somebody write in about that, you know? We could do that. Take all our hard hats and sort them.
But sort them into what?
The houses from Harry Potter.
Oh. Okay.
Or make up new ones. I don't care. Whatever. I'm just in it for the...
I think we should make up new ones.
$10.
This isn't Hogwarts, you know. I mean, this is what it is.
This isn't Hogwarts?
No, sorry.
God damn it.
We'd have to make up something new. We'll have to give that some thought just in case someone asks.
I know. We do houses called Fim, Calm, Vision...
Accounting,
software, systems. Windows, yeah, systems. Inside joke, people. Right now, Mark McKibben is laughing his ass off.
Could be.
Everybody else, no idea. So that was for you, Mark. Congratulations. All right, so, William.
Yes.
How was your week?
Nothing really significant to report, but I'm sure you have something to talk about.
I have something to talk about involving you, so presumably you have.
Has it only been a week?
I think so.
No, because we didn't get together for the...
Oh, so 2 weeks, motherfucker.
Well, I mean, for the fourth...
Yes.
I went back home to the farm and stuff, but I mean, that's that's not interesting to anybody.
That's why it took you so long to respond to that email. I thought that might be the case.
Oh, but and also every, you know, the other adult in the house took those days off and stuff. So
yeah,
I was kind of occupied, but you know, nothing that big happened. Although we tried to get together. We did get together. We tried to go visit.
We went to visit Azure Talon opted to not be there.
Which was good news when it comes down to it, but...
Sort of.
It, you know, we...
yeah.
Had he... Well, had we been there when he was there, it would have been nice for all parties involved just to visit. But instead,
we had a lovely visit with the nurse's station.
I mean, it was good that he wasn't there.
Wonderful.
But it would have been better if we'd been there earlier, I guess, when he was there.
As I suspected... his not responding to the email was because he basically just went home and...
collapsed. Yeah, of course, right. Sure.
Slept a lot because he doesn't really sleep at the hospital. And he will be back a week from today, actually. So I told him we might try and arrange something again.
So, yeah, how's it going? I mean...
Good. Okay. Things are shrinking that are supposed to shrink. Bad things are shrinking,
yeah.
People.
Yeah.
And he's part of the reason he got out already that time was he's recovering much faster now. In fact, I believe tomorrow he tries going back to work.
Oh, man, really?
He's doing just sort of limited stuff, and they're going to be careful, you know, he doesn't overdo it, but yeah.
That guy, he's...
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of... I don't know what it is.
I know what it's not. Hair.
No, but I mean...
He doesn't have a lot of that.
It's... What a challenge, you know, this must be for him personally and, you know, I don't
politically.
Know. It's just hard for me to imagine going through something like that.
You see, the bit, I want you to express the genuine sympathy we feel, and then I'm going to punch it up with jokes. See, to balance it out.
Well,
William all the credit. I also have deep emotions. I just refuse to express
truthfully, them. I admire anyone who can go through something like that, you know, successfully and positively, and all that. I mean, it's amazing to
admiration
me.
Seems weird in that context to me. I don't know that I disagree, but in my mind, I'm like, so you admire them for not dying.
No,
so
it's
you
not
don't
that.
Admire the people who die from cancer.
No, it isn't that. It's
I
just,
know, it just feels like
it's
that.
It's just,
though.
I think of myself going through it, and it's hard to imagine, you know, it's easy to imagine myself getting really discouraged. It's easy to imagine myself even kind of giving up a little bit. And attitude is really important with these things in terms of getting through them. Not just, you know, for your own psychological sake, but it actually aids the therapy itself. So, you know, it's a big deal when someone survives something like this. And I really admire that because I can never really put myself in that place and think of how I would, you know, fare in the same situation.
Cancer is one of the many apocalyptic events that I'm just like, yeah, I'd be the first one down. I'm out. Zombies, famine, looting, cancer, herpes.
Okay.
Any of those comes around.
What else did you do?
I'm the first one dead.
What did you do for the 4th of July?
The night before, the night of the 3rd, we went to the Quad Cities, where they had fireworks over the Mississippi River.
Oh, that's nice.
And so we watched those from a further distance than you might think, because the river was flooded, so you could just see the tops of the benches that you normally would sit along the river. So we were back a ways. They were fine. They weren't great. We got to go to an Italian restaurant we like over there that we don't get to go to too often. But yeah, whatever. And then, yeah, for the 4th itself, we did nothing. For the 5th, we actually worked, both of us. We were... among the very few who were actually hadn't taken the day off in ACT.
Oh, yeah, because that was Friday.
Yeah. And then Friday night, we had a makeup date night. And because of that, I've had an extra date night since we were last here, which is why I have seen 2 movies since we were last here.
Mm-hmm. What'd you see?
The first I saw on Friday, that Friday, the 5th, was This is the End.
Oh, yeah, you already told me you saw it, but you didn't tell me anything
about
it. Yes,
for those familiar, or unfamiliar, This is the End. Seth Rogen made it, so be ready for that, and cast a whole bunch of people in it, a bunch of sort of famous comedic actors and stuff, playing themselves. And the whole idea was they are at a party thrown by James Franco, and while the party is going on, the biblical apocalypse occurs. And then hijinks ensue. And it was pretty damn funny. I was pleased. If you are an individual who thinks that would be something you would enjoy, you should definitely go see it. It's, you know, if you see a movie like that and you're like, oh, that could be good or that could be really bad, they did it well. It's good. If you're somebody who doesn't think that kind of movie would appeal to you at all, it totally won't. Like, it's still a Seth Rogen-made comedy. So, there's still a lot of stoner jokes, stuff like that. A lot of weird homoerotic jokes throughout, that kind of thing. So, yeah, if you're not down with that, then avoid it. But if you think it would be your thing, I thought it was pretty hilarious. We laughed a lot. And then last night, we saw The Heat.
I don't know what that is.
It is a comedy out right now that is essentially taking the buddy cop trope and pulling a Bridesmaids on it. It's the girl version. So Sandra Bullock as an FBI agent and Melissa McCarthy as a beat cop who are forced to work together on an important case, and hijinks ensue.
Okay.
Not a big fan of Sandra Bullock in general. I am a big fan of Melissa McCarthy in general. Producer picked it, though. It was pretty good, too. I liked This Is the End better. I thought it was more funny.
Mm-hmm.
This was good, but you could tell where it would be better. It's definitely a buddy cop flick, so if you've never been into those, there's no point. But I thought it did pretty well. I mean, we definitely laughed. It's worth seeing. It's even worth seeing in the theater. It's not worth, like, owning or anything like that.
Hmm.
Whereas This Is the End, I probably won't buy it either, but I could understand that more. Somebody would be into that.
Gotcha.
But they're both decent. I mean, they were worth it. I laughed at both of them. The producer and I have been quoting lines from both of them, so.
Okay. That sounds like a good sign.
Yes. My Joseph House game didn't really continue because we took this week to... We wrapped it up the week before, the storyline. And then this week was what they were all doing during their downtime. Because they had 5 months or so between storylines.
Oh.
But 2 weeks ago we did wrap up that storyline. Our poor little dead girl's fairy boyfriend turned out to be a royal fairy of sorts. The son of one of the queens of summer, and ended up sacrificing his power and his allegiance and his immortality to bring her back to life.
Oh.
He hasn't spoken to her in the 5 months since.
Why?
We don't know yet.
Oh.
But he hasn't called him. When she calls, she just leaves voicemails and he never responds.
Well.
Uh-huh.
That's unfortunate.
A little bit.
Hmm.
But yeah, so that story's going on. I actually asked them at the end. I said, do you guys want to keep going with this, or do you want to do something different? Because I can do both. Because it was a good sort of stopping point. And unanimously, they wanted to keep going.
Really?
Yep.
Well, that's good.
We've been doing this one for over a year. But yeah, we got more stories to tell.
Excellent.
I think that's about it. Not much else. Defiance ended. Have you watched the end yet?
Not the very end, no. Sorry.
I still like it. It's getting a second season. And it had the kind of first season finale that if you didn't know it was getting a second season, you'd be kind of pissed off.
Let's see. The second to the last episode, which is the last one I've seen.
Yes.
I think this is the one I'm thinking of. Was actually really, really good.
Yes. It probably was my favorite of the season.
Yeah. It was very well put together, very well told.
It drew in a lot of backstory that fleshed out some characters nicely.
Yeah, it was... I remember watching it and thinking, if every episode had been like this one, this first season would have been, I mean, equal to, like, Battlestar Galactica. I mean,
yeah, it was a really good episode.
That's how good it was. The earlier episodes, a little bit uneven in terms of storytelling. One of the things that bothered me most about some of those episodes was, like, there was one episode where they got to this big cave where they had to find something inside, you know, and it's all really suspenseful and everything. And then after the commercial break, they're back from the cave. They got whatever it was. And you're thinking, what happened
the
there?
The hilarious part is I'm pretty sure that happened in two different episodes.
Both
with a cave.
No, it's happened a couple times. And
the mines solve everything. You go down to the mines and shit gets fixed.
Just about the moment you think to yourself, what, did they actually have that part of it in a webisode or something? Then you remember, oh, it's a game too, so maybe the game covered that.
I don't know, because they're now advertising that you can play through all of Season 1 on the MMO right now.
Well, yeah, and they probably have things in the MMO that weren't on the show.
Yeah.
Like most video games.
That's what it is. Apparently, you can, like, each episode is an adventure of something that was happening during that episode or that is related to that episode.
Well, that made the whole story of, I mean, that program and that show kind of fall flat when they did things like that. I mean, maybe they planned it that way. Maybe they thought that would be clever somehow. But for someone who's just going to watch the TV show and not play the game, it's just really annoying.
It's an interesting experiment. I did okay. I didn't have a lot of issues. It's clunky. It's a very sort of first season clunky.
Yeah, that's what the way I felt too. You have to kind of forgive that in a first season. Yeah. It's too bad,
and
but you always
compared
do have to
a lot of first seasons lately, it's been.
Oh, that yeah, really, I'll go with that too. I'll agree with that too. That you know, some first seasons that hobble through are worse than this. Yeah. Obviously, yeah.
And I think I really like the potential, but I think the performances are what's carrying me. By and large, the two leads, for lack of a better term, notwithstanding, because they both kind of suck, but sort of everybody else gives some really good performances.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I think, and there's been so much work into the backstory that they do incorporate fairly well into what you're seeing.
Yeah.
And they're sort of gradually unpacking that whole thing. And they're doing a pretty good job of it. So, yeah, we'll probably watch it when it comes back.
Well, and the second to last episode left a lot of questions and cliffhangers at the end. And the last episode just expands all of that. So, assuming you can't handle suspense well, you'd just be biting your nails for a year. I'm like, yeah, it would have been helpful if we had more resolution, but whatever. But if this was the end of the show, I'd be like, why the fuck did I watch this?
It makes me think of, you know, how Warehouse 13 had several seasons and it never really hit its stride in terms of having really good, solid stories.
Yeah, no, never.
And I wasn't surprised when you told me they were going to come back for a final season with just six shows. It's like, yeah, they're kind of giving up because they're realizing we just can't seem to get this right. And I've often expressed how baffled I am that that's true, considering all the things they did get right.
Mm.
But I've often said, if you have a really good story, which to me is the same as saying if you have really good relationships and character development, you can do almost everything else wrong and people will still like it. But if that's wrong, you can do almost everything else right and it won't work.
But Warehouse 13 proved you wrong, because Warehouse 13 managed to very successfully have good relationships and character development, but consistently crappy story.
Well,
maybe it's a labeling thing. Plot. The plots of the episodes in Warehouse 13 to me are atrocious.
No, that's true. And I see what you're saying about those characters. And
I love them, and that's the only reason I watch the show.
But they didn't. The individual characters, you know, show for show, I hear what you're saying. The performances are pretty good. The relationships are pretty good. But it's not like, what journey was Pete on? Or has Pete been on for the last several years, right?
Pete's the clown.
What journey has Micah even been on?
Micah's actually been through a fair bit.
Yeah, but how has she changed besides her hairstyle? You know, probably the only character they've really done stuff with is
Claudia.
Well, Claudia, not as much as Artie, I think. Artie's, you know, he reconciled with his father. I mean, all these things happened. But even that was done in such a clunky way. It just, for some reason, they just couldn't pull it together. And they had all of the elements were there to do it. And I suppose, as you just pointed out, since the characters were strong and the relationships were strong, it did allow them to have, what was it, 4 seasons? And
this is five. It'll be okay. 5 in a short one.
So, you know, it got them that far, but it's, you know, it's not going to get them to a full 6th season, and it's not going to be a show that, you know, people always remember. And except that I think the aesthetic was so strong that, you know, people will probably be doing stuff with it in fan fiction and in cosplay and stuff for a really long time.
I mentioned it to somebody not long ago, and they said, oh, I've never seen that show. That's the Eureka spinoff, right? And I was like, damn it, not really, no. But I know why you say that.
Yeah. Because, honestly, I'm sad to see it go, because I really wanted to see them hit some kind of stride, you know? I wanted to see...
See, I'm ready, because I don't hate it yet. And that'll happen if it keeps going.
Well, see, I'm not ready because I don't like it yet. You know, I...
Then why did you watch it for 5
because
seasons?
Because I like how it looks. And I do like specific characters, and I like to see them once in a while. But nothing gels.
That is the thing, honestly. If you put Saul Rubinek as an actual character who will be in every episode of a TV show, I will probably watch it no matter what it is.
Well, that's kind
of... I just adore him. I always have.
Yes, individual characters, once in a while good moments with the relationships, but nothing gelled together to make a story or a story arc or anything interesting. And I just can't believe, with all of the other stuff they had going on, it has all the potential to be a really great show. And I guess I just kept holding out hope for a very long time, obviously, but I don't know. But I still love the way it looks. You know, the
still have a steampunk fetish?
Well, no, I mean, because it's not just steampunk. It's really, it's got a lot of things they're working into it. And I thought very seamlessly. I thought that Tesla was a brilliant design. I thought the Farnsworth...
Oh, God. I'm so pissed off about the Tesla.
It was a great idea.
If you have a non-lethal weapon of that much accuracy and effectiveness, stop pointing it at people and giving them a chance to surrender. Every episode that happens, and they pull the drop on them, and, you know, then they get away or whatever. See, I'm like, just shoot them. You know they're the bad guy. Shoot them. When they wake up, have handcuffs on them.
See, this is what I mean. They formed... What am I trying to say here? Just things like that. You know, you've got this cool weapon that someone figured out how it should look, and they did a great job, and it's a neat little plot device. And they did nothing with it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, what also bothered me about that was they go into a scene and one person's got a Tesla and the other person's got a gun.
They don't mass produce them. They only have what
well, I know, but
Nikolai left them.
But Claudia made her own.
She
little
made
one.
A Tesla grenade.
Yeah. Well, and she's got a.
Oh, and her little mini yeah. one. Yes.
Yeah. So
this has got to be spellbinding radio for y'all.
Well, I don't know it. I like good storytelling, and when I see something that's got such potential.
He says, why couldn't it be more like Star Trek Voyager? He said that to me when we were sitting in the IHOP.
No,
looked me dead in the eye. He said, why can't you be more like Star Trek Voyager, Tony?
I didn't say that.
And I said, I am like
Star
Trek
Voyager.
And his eyes narrowed, and he said, no, you're not. You're not like Star Trek Voyager at all. And then he went and sat at a different table. It was sad.
Anyway.
I guess I'm ready. Like with Leverage, I'm ready for it to be done.
Are we going to draw anything from the hat?
Mm-hmm.
We probably should. That's what we're here for.
No reason to. Oh, yeah.
We always sit here and talk and talk.
The entire premise of the show.
People get bored and say, draw something from the hat. What's the matter with you?
Nobody has ever said that.
I'm sure they have.
Nobody's ever said that within our hearing or reading. If you'd like to say, draw something from that, what's the matter with you? Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and write that down there. Or attach a WAV file that has you saying that. I don't know.
Dear Bowled Over by the Bowler. Well, that's pretty presumptuous to think it's a bowler. I guess it has been.
I find it weird because that's like everything. A Dear Abby thing that you do to people who asked you questions.
What's the first story movie, book, comic, etc., that had a big impact on you as a kid, yours in Curiosity Jazz?
The story of O when I was five. No, that's not true. They say I screamed during E.T.
You screamed?
I was three.
And?
I think I screamed when he screamed. He was creepy looking.
Okay.
Come on. E.T. was kind of creepy looking.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't have a problem with E.T.
Yeah, but you were older.
Yes, I was. So
You're a big kid. I was three. In retrospect, I don't know why.
Do you have a serious answer to this question?
That is my serious answer.
E.T.?
When I was three, I was told, and I vaguely maybe remember, that I screamed at E.T.
All right, how about one that you can actually remember? Not that someone had to tell you.
She said the first.
All right. I think she means one that you remember. God. I have no idea how to answer this question.
I remember as a teenager watching a movie I had seen before, Cloak and Dagger, and bawling my eyes out. I was probably like 14 or something, and I had to go downstairs and like have my mom console me. I was just sobbing.
Why?
Because I found it so sad. Mm. And it was weird. I remember it. My mom loved to do this. My mom still loves to do this. When you talk about something significant or tragic or whatever, she will come up with something similar to try and sympathize. And sometimes she misses the mark. But in this one, she was talking about the song Puff the Magic Dragon, which has much the same thing. It's this whole growing up and then your childhood stuff is left behind. And Cloak and Dagger has that because he's got his little action figure that's his hero, and it's his imaginary friend, and the whole movie involves this imaginary friend near the end. Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen Cloak and Dagger, which I believe was in 1983. He dies, essentially. The imaginary friend dies. Mm. Now, we're supposed to be uplifted because his estranged father ends up showing up and taking care of him, and he's played by the exact same actor. So that's supposed to be like, it's all okay now. But it's still that concept, that loss of innocence, that loss, the idea to me that he had this cool imaginary friend that he's never going to see again, like, just messed with my head.
Well,
see, you asked for a serious answer. That's what you get, huh?
I don't know. The first story that had a big impact on me. I know a story that had an impact on. I mean, you know, the first time I can remember being affected by like a movie, and it would have been a movie, I suppose. It would have almost had to have been a movie. It was Bambi.
Ooh.
The re-release of Bambi, which was, that happened in the same year that Jaws was released, and don't remember the year for that. 1970.
No clue.
The interesting thing with this story is that while my parents were taking me to see Bambi, the other adult in my house, her father was telling her mother that he was taking them to see Bambi, but he took them to see Jaws. So her answer to this question would probably be Jaws.
So who got more traumatized? Yeah.
But when here's another spoiler if you haven't seen Bambi, when Bambi's mother was killed, that was just terrible.
And here's the thing.
That was terrible.
That's a classic one. You're part of a whole generation that like can't love properly because of that specific scene.
It was awful.
And I'm pretty sure I saw Bambi in the theater. I neither remember that scene nor remember getting affected by it.
Oh, man.
And it seems like the kind of thing that would just have blown me away. And like I said, they raised a whole generation of Americans that like can't get proper erections because of that scene in Bambi.
Okay.
That just messed up everybody.
I'll just try to ignore that you said that. But the point is, it was just devastating. I mean, yeah. This was. You got to know this character. This character interacted with Bambi in much the same manner that if you lived in a healthy family, your mother interacted with you. And
my mother walked on two legs.
And, you know, this was in a time where normally when you watched cartoons, you know, Nobody died.
It was happy, yes.
Even if someone got shot at or was in a big car crash, it exploded, they walked away. And, wow, she was dead. It was a pretty big deal. I don't know if I'd say... I mean, that's more of a moment in a movie that had an impact.
Yeah.
In terms of a story, like, wow, that's a great story that I, you know... Like my brother Scott, for example, because he and I went and watched Raiders of the Lost Ark again in the theater a few weeks ago. I probably mentioned that. That film was so significant to him, as was Star Wars. And I could tell when we went and watched it again in the theater, it meant so much to him to see it again. With me in particular, because when he first saw it, it was in Greenfield, Iowa, in a little theater with me, because we were staying with our grandparents for the summer. And, I mean, you know, between Star Wars and Indiana Jones, I mean, you know, he collects things from these films. He, it's just made a big impact on him personally. And he's a graphic artist, so, you know, a lot of his art was influenced by it. And I'm not sure, neither Star Wars nor Indiana Jones affected me like that. And I'm having a hard time remembering any stories that did. That said, what did have a big impact on me when I was a kid was anything Jim Henson did, anything, it doesn't even matter what it was, but probably The Muppet Show in general, probably the most, and Warner Brothers cartoons in general. Both of those things had a pretty big impact.
That explains why you're so free with dynamite. I wonder about that. No, I feel bad because it was a very touching and interesting thing you just said. When you talked about how impactful it was on your brother and how he collected things from them, I totally imagined this just wall of like figures and everything, and somebody else in there like trying to trade stuff, and one says, "You give me the idol, I give you the whip."
Right.
And they're just on the shelf there. It's like the lamest Far Side comic right there, people. You give me the idol, I give you the whip.
No, but yeah, those had a big impact on me, Warner Brothers. And I mean, my childhood heroes were Mel Blanc and Jim Henson. And a lot of kids didn't even know who they were. They just knew the Muppets and Bugs Bunny.
As often happens with this, I gave my answer and then you gave your answer and it reminded me of a new answer. Susan Cooper, British author, who wrote a series called, generally called the Dark is Rising series. Consisted of 5 books called The Book of Three, The Dark is Rising, Green Witch, The Grey King, and Silver on the Tree. It was a fantasy series, not dissimilar from Chronicles of Narnia. It was not a Christian allegory, and it actually used heavily various Celtic and Gaulish mythology.
Mm.
And I loved that series. I really thought it was amazing. And it was in the age before there was really such a thing as young adult books.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember reading these, and I think I even reread them like in junior high. And the words were very easy, and they were in my elementary school library. I think I first picked them up in, like, third grade or something. It was not complicated to read, but conceptually it was very mature, and I remember thinking, it's weird that these books are here. I mean, there was nothing in them that would have given them a bad rating, but they just seemed a little high concept for, you know, third, fourth, fifth graders. But it was very interesting. It's all the struggle between the light and the dark and all that kind of thing, and it's the usual, there's kids involved and the kids are special for various reasons and stuff.
Yeah.
And I really dove into that mythology. In fact, for years I thought if I had ever got a tattoo, I specifically was going to be something from those books that would have been insanely complicated. But yeah, those really meant a lot, and they affected a lot of my view on mythology, and my view on... It's interesting, and this is a little bit of a spoiler alert for those here. In the end, shocking, the good side wins. The light triumphs over the dark.
What?
What this means, though, and it's explicated here, is not that now everything is light or whatever. It basically eliminates the darkness, which is the sort of supernatural sense of evil, and says now whatever evil and darkness is in the world will be because regular humans created it. Mm-hmm, right. And so it leaves, it doesn't, you know, try and wash away morality. What it says is this whole time we've been dealing with this supernaturally moral battle, and once it's over, that just goes away, and what's left is what people actually do.
Yeah.
And I really like that idea, because far too often you either get the happily ever after shit,
yeah,
or you get the, well, you never really beat them, you know, they're always kind of there. And this was, nope, we won, it's done, yay us. Now it's just reality. Yeah. And that made a lot of sense to me at the time, and it was satisfying while not feeling pandered to.
What series was this again?
It's colloquially known as the Dark is Rising series. Oh, okay. The Dark is Rising is the title of the second book in it. Actually, the second book was a Newbery Honor book, and the fourth book was a Newbery Award winner.
Wow.
It starts with a book called The Book of Three, which is very... It's not nearly as fantasy as a lot of the rest of it. It's three kids on vacation in a Cornwallish village and solving sort of a mystery about things. Oh. But then the second book gets super fucked up supernatural, and then we go from there. So I would recommend them even to this day. And yeah, I think they had a lot of impact on my future storytelling and nerdity and all that kind of stuff. I didn't make you listen to those. No, I haven't read those to you. No. Oh wait, no.
Yeah, Cornwall.
Yes. And we didn't quite finish the first book.
Oh, I thought we did. Apparently I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Well, if stories can include things that aren't fictional.
They cannot.
Okay, never mind then.
Okay, what?
Well, I mean, I was inspired by a lot of the the little science books I read that were for elementary school kids and junior high kids, and you know, watching Nova with my grandfather, who, you know, he'd never finished his high school education, but he liked watching nature shows on PBS, and so whenever we'd visit, and they lived in Adair County in Greenfield, Iowa, I was just talking about that. You know, he'd watch those, and sitting down and watching those with him was just great. I mean, they weren't fictional stories. They were stories about real things, but I loved those probably more than anything else. I wonder what it means, though, that the entertainment, the non, you know, documentary entertainment that I liked when I was younger was mostly like Carol Burnett show and the Muppet Show and, you know, variety entertainment. I really liked that. And I think one of the reasons that
I like that now too.
I mean. Yeah. And one of the reasons I liked episodic television was because it kind of took that and turned it into an ongoing story, you know, episodic sketches is what they were, whether it was comedy or drama or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not so much, you know, one big epic story. I never was a fan of that kind of thing, really.
I think that's a thing, though, and obviously going back far enough, I'm sure it's not, but sitting here thinking about it, a lot of the TV shows I watched as a kid, and not so much the cartoons, because there were just tons of those, and yeah, I don't remember those, but the things like that I watched with my family, I think had a pretty big impact. Shows like Matt and MASH really gave me my perspective on war and the military.
Yeah, I guess that's true for me too.
Like,
yeah.
But I'm like a little kid, so to me, like, seriously,
yeah, right.
That was my whole image of that kind of thing.
Right, right.
Cosby Show gave me a lot of my image of family. Mm-hmm. A lot came of that. And I remember, it's hilarious, I'm fairly certain that at no point was I even thinking of the fact that they were black. I mean, if you told me, like, asked me, are they black or what, I'd be like, yeah, they're black. But I don't think, like, nowadays, to watch a show like that, I would be colored by the fact, sorry, no pun intended, my perspective would be colored by the fact that it was black or white or whatever. At the time, I don't think so. But, oh my God. One of the biggest influences I had as a child, one of the biggest influences, was Bill Cosby's Comedy Records.
Oh, well, yeah.
At like age 6 or 7, I had those damn things memorized. Yeah, so much of my humor came out of that originally. That was huge. And then the Cosby Show was just an extension of that.
Yeah.
My family watched a lot of mystery shows, and so for a long time, I'm sort of less now, but for a long time I was very big into mysteries.
I think my favorite cartoon growing up was Scooby-Doo. I loved that there was always some kind of reasonable explanation at the end, you know, and I love that they figured it out somehow.
I feel like it took me a while to put that together. Hmm. I feel like I had probably watched dozens of episodes before I just knew, well, of course it's going to be somebody in disguise. I feel like, I mean, nowadays, of course, it's obvious. But at the time, I feel like it took me a while to figure that out,
I like
which
that whole
is
thing.
Sad.
I like that, all of that. But
Murder, She Wrote, I watched a lot of Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, the moment in a story with the big impact that I can remember is Bambi, but the stories that I enjoyed as a kid that made an impact on me was, I mean, cartoons and Muppets, basically, and then probably on a secondary level, the episodic television I watched, whether it was a family sitcom or whether it was, I don't know, even Dukes of Hazzard or A-Team or something like that, you know.
I suspect it even influenced my concepts of romance at an early age, because that was the golden age of sort of will-they-won't-they television.
Well, that's true. You had, like,
constantly.
Moonlighting and things
Moonlighting,
like that.
Who's the Boss did that. What was another one I was just thinking of? Buck Rogers did that. Because I watched a lot of Buck Rogers when I was that age, too. Like, there was so much of the, clearly they like each other, but no, it's not happening. Like, every sitcom had that. And I think that may have colored my views of romance for a long time.
I think it
helped that I was incredibly unpopular, so.
Well, romance, I didn't really pay attention to any of that in the shows. The thing I've noticed most in shows was that a lot of plots revolved around somebody not being entirely honest about something.
Yes.
Not just outright lying, but not telling somebody something that they should tell them.
Or, if you're lucky, a misunderstanding.
Yeah. And then everything finally got resolved in the end when people just told the truth. And that made a huge impression on me. I remember watching shows and how often that was the deal. You know, it's like,
you get so frustrated.
Why don't they just
tell them you didn't mean
that.
It was this.
Just apologize or just tell this person you love or whatever it is. And it actually, you know, made me think as I was growing up, I'm not going to let that kind of thing happen to me. I'm just going to say it. You know, say
that.
What I mean and mean what I say.
I have that, too.
Because I'm not going to waste any time with that kind of drama going
maybe
on in my
life. Maybe
that's
a generational thing, too. Maybe yeah, those of us who are watching that know the value of just say it up front. And, I mean, I think there can be complications with that as well.
Well, yeah.
Being overly blunt and so forth. But it solves a lot of the problems we saw on TV.
It does.
But to be fair, those probably wouldn't have come up anyway. Because
no.
Most of those are really ridiculous.
But I like sketch / episodic storytelling. I do.
Yeah.
And I don't think it came from television. I think it came from me liking variety entertainment, and then episodic TV it kind of takes some of that element and puts it in, you know, to a story like that. And I don't know where I got interest in variety entertainment. I suppose it came from watching, you know, Carol Burnett and The Muppet Show and whatever. There was lots of variety entertainment on TV when I was growing
up. Oh, yeah,
up.
At the time, there was the
Sonny
Phil
and Cher.
The Blank Hour, like
yeah,
everybody.
Sonny and Cher, the Osmond, Donnie Marie Osmond had one.
Smothers Brothers had either their second or third one by
then.
Yeah,
Smothers Brothers, that's right. Hee Haw, Laughing.
Was Laughing still around?
Yeah.
Laughing only made it to the early 70s.
Oh, I watched Laughing. So
I only watched Laughing in recent years.
There was a lot of it, and I liked it. But it was kind of unusual, I think. One of the reasons these things aren't on TV anymore or really anywhere else, because they've tried to bring them back, like in the 90s and stuff, and people just don't like them.
Yeah.
I mean, I do, but apparently other people don't.
Well, now you're shit out of luck.
Yeah.
Because now, if you want to do it piecemeal, I'm amazed that sketch comedy shows survive. Because I'm like, now, if you want a little of this, a little of that, you have the internet. You have YouTube. I could very easily do, let's see somebody stand up. Okay, now let's see somebody sing, you know,
really easily. That's true. Although I went looking, thinking about that very thing, I went looking for, you know, how many ventriloquists can I find? How many jugglers can I find doing things on YouTube? It was pretty hard, actually, to find people doing those things.
They did kind of disappear.
But I...
At this point, there's like two famous ones.
I can't explain why I like it so much.
But I can, but I'm not going to. I think it's better you not know. It has to do with the chilling past that you have blocked out and all those dead bodies.
But I even like watching anything with old movies with, you know, people who were in vaudeville. I mean, I love that stuff. I can't explain why.
You're kind of a hipster.
No. Don't say that.
You think you like it. You just like it ironically.
No, I really do like it.
Tell us what crap you liked when you were little that made you into the idiot you are today. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. Tell us how the failures of your parents to protect you from banned books and late-night television have turned you into the pervy monster you have become. I ran out of steam.
You know what people are thinking? They're thinking, well, William, for a guy that is so much into vaudeville and sketch comedy and stuff, we'd think you'd be more entertaining. Maybe funnier.
No, they're not thinking that.
Oh. Are you?
No. People who... That's a medium point. At this point, we all get you.
Oh, okay.
We've all been around long enough. People who have only known you for a little bit might be like, well, but you, that makes no sense. And we're like, no, this is all an elaborate puzzle that we kind of see how it fits together now.
Really?
Yes.
And you won't explain it to me?
No.
Okay.
I like you too much to tell you.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
That, no. I'm protecting you from that horror.
All right. Why don't you draw something from
that? All right. Why don't you draw something?
Why don't you do it?
Why doesn't your face get in the head? All right, here we go. Dear Hatters, what is the lowest form of wit? This is from Craig of the UK.
I don't know.
I know, that's fine. Brevity. No. Wait. That's the soul.
Don't people say sarcasm or something?
Puns. Puns comes up a lot. Puns are the lowest form of wit.
Well, I tend to think...
Poop jokes.
I tend to think crude humor. And not so much scatological humor, like you were just alluding to, but any humor that seems almost to make people laugh because it's embarrassing them rather than amusing them, to be a little bit easy, cheap, whatever. That said, somehow in my view, I have a hard time putting forms of wit in some kind of hierarchy.
I mean,
wit is, to me, first of all, I'm not a witty person in my view, because a witty person to me is someone who can think of things very quickly that are going to be amusing in some manner, usually funny, but not always. And so the quickness has to be there.
Yes.
And to me, if you can do that, if you can think of these things very quickly and they amuse people, that's it. You know, it doesn't,
yeah.
I'm not going to sit and evaluate how clever I think it is or whatever. If it's more about, I can't really think in terms of hierarchies or lowest or highest. And I think the people who do, I think what they really mean is that, you know, making fun of somebody that seems really easy or something. And maybe that's what they mean. I have no idea. Maybe I don't even know what it means to say something's the lowest form of wit.
I would believe that.
I thought sarcasm was what people said was the lowest form of wit. Because it was... I don't know why, just...
I thought they said puns, but I don't... Probably they've said both. Mm. We should Google it.
But why would it be puns? Because puns can be really creative sometimes.
Yeah, no, but people hate puns.
I know, but it's such a fun way of hating. You know, it's like, oh, I can't believe you said that. You know what I mean?
Well, then maybe they said it was the lowest form of wit sarcastically.
I don't know.
Well, then let me say some shit. You spend an awful long time saying I don't know.
I ate too much chocolate coming over here today.
It's totally fine if you talk a lot. It's when you talk a lot to literally say, I have no idea.
Okay.
And take 6 minutes.
I know.
What's going on?
I know. Just go.
Well, we need to talk fast because there's something we have to do before the end. I do evaluate. Because I spend a lot of time watching a lot of comedy, especially stand-up. But I watch others. And I've discovered that there are jokes and bits that I like and appreciate that I don't find amusing. Or things that really make me laugh that I'm like, no, that wasn't good, but it just made me laugh. There is a sort of cleverness to it. And there's stuff that I... Like, there's subject matters and things that I personally don't find funny, but I'm like, but that was really clever. That was really clever. It just doesn't make me laugh. I think nowadays when I get into low forms of wit, it's easy becomes a thing. It's stuff that seems hacky to me. I'm like, we all already know that joke. Like, you change some of the nouns around, but we've all heard that joke. Or, you know.
But that's not the same as being... See, to me, what's the problem with that is it's not really being witty, right?
No.
Because wit is inherently creative. So yes. If you're just borrowing something else and changing a few things around...
Exactly.
It doesn't even qualify as wit now, so then...
The attacking someone or being, you know, hurtful or anything, that one can still totally be funny. Even if it's ones that don't amuse me at all, you can get really clever with that shit. But you're right, the easy shots aren't so clever. If a really, really huge fat man walks in and you make a joke that basically says he's fat, yeah, that's not very clever.
Well, I wonder if that's the whole point then, that is there are some quick jokes that are not that creative. They're not really, and so it barely qualifies as wit because it can't just be fast. It has to be surprising.
No.
It has to be
clever.
Yeah, it does have to be clever. And if it's not clever, then it really doesn't even qualify as wit.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah.
So you know, as long as it's quick and clever, then it's witty, and then it's all good. But I think it starts to get, you know, when it isn't very clever, then it's not even really witty, is it?
So basically, Craig, what we're saying, sorry, we're sort of going in the wrong direction. What we are saying is the lowest form of wit is William.
Well, we already knew that.
Bless you.
But see, you have subjective things that don't make you laugh.
Yes.
But you can acknowledge that those are subjective and that doesn't
absolutely
mean it's not witty.
I've had to learn that because I am very big into the sort of freedom of speech and comedians can joke about anything and stuff like that, and there's some stuff that I'm just like, oh my god, don't fucking joke about it. Like, it would piss me off. But there's stuff that I have to acknowledge is just as heinous, and yet it doesn't, like, it makes me laugh or whatever, and that's, and so I know it's me, you know? Yeah. So, anyway, we have a thing we have to talk about. Thank you for your questions, but here's the deal. I told you this was coming and then forgot. Approximately 2 episodes ago, we had a bit of a discussion about sombreros.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So how I found that just hilarious, because sombrero just means hat in Spanish. And so the fact that we called it that for a specific kind of hat seemed silly to me. Well, my brother-in-law, Eric... who listens sometimes to the show, wrote in with a great deal of information and photos all about this. For those who don't know, my brother-in-law Eric is what I refer to as my Mexican authority, because he is in fact Mexican and was born and raised there till he was 18.
And you respect him.
Yeah, and he knows what the fuck he's talking about most of the time.
Respect his authority.
And so, he's who I go to. Danielle used to be my black authority, by the way. I don't really have... I kind of have one named Steve at work. And that's a key, too, to black my black...
authority?
Yes, my black authority, there tend to be two factors in it. One, you should be black. And two, you should have grown up in South Chicago. Because I always end up... That's always what I end up with, is black people who grew up in South Chicago, and I ask them questions.
About
black folk.
Okay.
Where stereotypes come from, is such and such stereotype at all accurate? Why do people say that? Is this actually a stereotype? I heard somebody say it and it doesn't make even any sense to me.
I see.
That kind of stuff. Or is big Latinos offensive? That was good. By the way, people, I don't know if I've ever told you the pig Latinos thing. Eric was the authority on that too. I don't know that he found it funny. He agreed he didn't think it was inherently offensive in and of itself, and yet could easily and quickly be perceived as such, which was sort of what I expected. So, yeah. All right. So, anyway, I'm going to read this. I don't normally do this. If you write in a bunch of shit, it doesn't mean I'm going to go for it. But I was just so overwhelmed by this that I went for it. So, dear Sombrero Magico Parlante, or Magical Talking Hat. As Tony correctly states, the word sombrero simply means hat in Spanish. And there are many different types of hats in Mexico. The one you generally think of with the term sombrero is the wide-brimmed hat that the charros, Mexican cowboys, wear. Mariachis wear the same hat, but perhaps more stylized and covered with velvet and ornate designs in silver or gold thread. The other type you may think of are the woven straw hats with a tall, cone-shaped crown, more traditional of the coastal regions in Mexico. And those are kind of like, to me, they just look like a cowboy hat, but they're woven. Sort of like a straw cowboy hat. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. The first hat used by charros was the cordobés, a hat from Cordoba, Spain. It had a flat brim and flat-topped crown. It was the indigenous people that began to modify Spanish hats, making them from woven straw and increasing the brims and crowns. The Tzotzil people still use a type of cordobés hat in woven straw and add red ribbon around it. This ribbon, or band, was worn by pre-Hispanic tribes instead of a hat, and sometimes they would also have a cloth or bandana that is still used by the Tarahumara people. The Hicholis also use a similar hat, but they hang seeds along the brim. Hmm. And then we have some pictures of the Hicholis, of a charro hat, of a mariachi hat, of a tzotzil hat, and a sombrero durangonese from the state of Durango, and a woven durangonese hat. If I can figure out how, I might try and put these up on the...
That's very cool.
...blog, but it's tricky.
That's very cool.
Yes. So, thank you for that, Eric. That was awesome. And now we all know...
We all know what?
All that shit about sombreros.
Okay. I thought you were going to say something else there.
No, actually, I paused because here's the thing. I was not going to go for the cheap shot and do the knowing is half the battle thing, but I was still raised by that, so I feel somebody's going to. So I was pausing and waiting for I don't even know who to say it. I didn't really think it was going to be you. I kind of just thought a disembodied voice would do it.
Yes, yes.
So...
Okay.
And actually, bonus points if any of you did it at home while listening. Maybe I was pausing for you.
But the thing is, if I'd said it, then someone would have had to sing the G.I. Joe theme, and it wouldn't have ended.
Ever.
No. Because then we would have had to do a Light Bright commercial, and...
Yes.
I mean...
And then we'd come back and find out that the Viper was just a window washer with a bad accent. I can't even believe that was a whole fucking episode. Do you remember that episode?
It was kind of after my time, but...
They're hanging around the G.I. Joe headquarters. It's not even the headquarters. It was like some just random house they were. I don't even know why. And somebody on the phone calls and says, I am the Viper. I am coming. And they spent the whole time freaking out of like who this evil, clearly Cobra-related person was, because the name was Viper. And it's just like a Russian dude who is the Window Viper come to wash the windows. Seriously, that was an episode. Fuck you, G.I. Joe, is what I'm saying. Support the troops, but fuck you, G.I. Joe. Anyway, it is time, so we should go.
Right.
Y'all should write the hat, everybody. Even have people who don't listen and will never listen write the hat. That'll just be fun. Do that. Make your coworkers write emails to the hat. And then don't have them listen, but you can laugh at what they asked.
Yeah.
And all of you write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, go to the blog and talk about this stuff. Maybe look at some pictures of sombreros if I can get them the fuck up there. At themagicaltalkinghat.com. And tune in next week, because we'll be back. We always are.
Yeah.
Always. 122 Thursdays in a row.
Yep.
So, we'll be back.
We will.
I should have read that whole thing in that, like, Univision announcer voice. Sombreros are known. You know, that kind of would have been awesome.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.